And now for something completely different.
Happy Hour.
Happy Hour.
What's up? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy. And on the phone line, I've been listening to this guy for, I can't believe it, 18 years now. The one and only Scott Farrell is on Hoppy Hour. What's up, Scott?
Hoppy Hour, always good to get back with you, bro. Like, imagine that. You've listened to me for 18 years, and I've done it for, this is, I think, my 41st straight year doing it. I started in 83. When I went to Indiana University and I started doing, the Bob Knight Show, started covering Indiana basketball on a daily basis, went to all their games home and away, and then I also did Indiana soccer play-by-play, and at the time I thought, what is this? I don't care about soccer. Meanwhile, they had won, multiple national championships under this guy, Jerry Yeagley, and when I was there... doing the games, they won another one. So not only did I do the soccer play-by-play and they won a national championship, but I did the basketball. And my last year there, 87, they won it all. They beat Syracuse at the Superdome. And then we went out after the game. Indiana was down 13 with 3 minutes to go. They came back and they won on a last-second shot by Keith Smart. And then we all went out on Bourbon Street and ate a bag of mushrooms.
Dude, this is all alleged, Scotty. But I'm a big fan of mushrooms in my salad, if you know what I'm saying. It's all alleged. Yeah. I would never, ever take magic mushrooms. But if I did, it's been life-changing, like maybe right now. But no, listen, I just had it in my salad.
Listen, everyone I know has tried mushrooms. Like even your boy Aaron Rodgers likes psychedelics. So like back in the day, I did it when I was in college. And I just remember... what was great about it is that once we started shrooming, we wanted to shroom every week.
I know, it's fun like that. Dude, it's funny. You see the before and after of Aaron Rodgers, pre-shrooms and after-shrooms, and Aaron Rodgers winning the Super Bowl 13 years ago, very chill, very corporate, and now he's like ripping into Jimmy Kimmel. It's crazy.
I was at the Super Bowl, and it pissed me off. Because he beat the Steelers, and I also saw him lose to Dallas, and then I saw him win six of them. So I went to six Super Bowl wins by the Steelers and two losses, and losing sucks. But I've been to 30 straight media rows at the Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh!
Of the Super Bowl, I've been to 30 straight, and then I've been to. Overall, I've been to 15 of the games. So half of the time I went, I left and came back to wherever, New York, Miami, wherever I was at the time, radio. But I went to 15 of them, six with the Steelers winning, two losing. And then I went to seven other Super Bowls. Two that I remember vividly were the Giants wins over Tom Brady and the Patriots. And so I've been to some great ones. And it's always a trip. I went to Vegas this year and did the show there. I find that Vegas is more fun for not only NFL draft when they had it there, but the Super Bowl being there, it was more fun. And it's just such a party. I think that they should have the Super Bowl there, within a window of 3-5 years. I think the NCAA championship football game should be there. I think the NCAA basketball Final Four should be there. I think they're obviously getting baseball there. And then I lived there twice and did my show there twice. And as you know, I'm heavily into gambling.
Yeah.
So, and I'm also, like, when I was there, there's just so many fucking hookers. That it just makes it more fun. It makes it more fun to go to, out to dinner, out to party, out to bars, when there's just thousands of escorts and hookers trying to fuck you. I just think it's just fantastic. There's just, you don't get that in Tampa. You don't get that in Glendale. You don't get that in, remember they had the Super Bowl in New York, and I remember when they had it at Giant Stadium, and it was 54 degrees in February. They had it in New York, and everyone thought it would be a colossal failure. And the only thing that showed up at that game was not hookers. It was mobsters and mafia guys killing people.
Yeah, you always hear about hookers at, like, Radio Row and at, like, the Super Bowls. And then the one that I've seen in my experience, radio hosts can be very naughty at the morning show boot camp. I've gone to morning show boot camps over the years. And right. The one 11 or 10 years ago, rest in peace, Dennis Hoff, he went there. He was like promoting his brand and right. going on radio shows. And I've never seen a few married people get Dennis Hoff's info. And I don't think it was for a radio interview. And I remember
I'm friends with him.
Yeah.
I was good friends with Dennis. And it sucked when he died. And there's been so many crazy things that have happened at his Bunny Ranch, and you name it, from Lamar Odom, it goes on and on. I remember, he was a really cool guy. He used to do my show all the time. He tried to get me to have sex with Air Force Amy. I did not do that. I have not been caught having sex with prostitutes at a brothel in Nevada yet in my life, and I'm hoping that I can get to the finish line without having the necessity of having to do that.
I've actually, besides maybe like buying drinks or paying for Bumble or Tinder, I've never paid for sex. I have no draw to it. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Like, to me, if I'm feeling alone or if I was going through my dry spell in my 20s, man, you might think about it for a second, but then like you go on Pornhub and then everything's fine.
Yeah, that can be quality time spent right there on that thing. And look, like when you're in Vegas, right? Like, so I did a million residencies there where I did my show live for weeks at a time and lived there, right, in the casinos. And I did one stretch downtown for 10 years. I did it, three or four times a year. I was down there, and I would do 2-3 weeks at a time where I would just do a show live every day. In the, bar, in the casino, blah, 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 et cetera. And I had a deal with the, the casino and the owner of the casino and everything else. And what was great was that I have all these pictures of me, just thousands of pictures of me with hookers. And, I have, every night, when there was a bar that they had there in this casino, no names, right? But this bar was gigantic, and it was like the biggest bar you ever seen in your life. And I would literally go to this bar after my show, and there'd be literally I'm not even kidding. There'd be somewhere between, 100 hookers sitting there. And you knew what they were up to. There was no getting around it. They weren't there looking for a lover. They were there looking for money. And it was crazy. I would go down there to watch sports and, I bet on so many games, and I'd go to the bar to watch the games that I'm betting on, and I'd be sitting there and I'd just be getting absolutely attacked by hookers. I mean, just every one of them. They mean business, dude. They are savages. I mean, they're animals in Vegas. Animals.
Scotty, what would it have been like in the 90s if there was Tinder and Bumble? What would Scott Farrell have been like on Tinder and Bumble?
I don't even know. I've never done any of that. I just think that, when I did it, let's face facts, I was the craziest, rowdiest. I was the first syndicated sports radio show nationally. I was on all the Stern channels. Howard was on in mornings. I was on at night. I was a shock jock, whatever they called me. They said I was the devil. I was Satan. They said I was peddling porn. They said I peddled gambling. I was a drug dealer. They said I was a pedophile. Because I played Godsmack and Metallica and Pantera, and I played music my whole show underneath the show. That pissed off radio program directors. But the funny thing was that I got huge ratings, and I made them a ton of money, and I never needed to, at the time, I just remember, I made a lot of money, and I didn't need, I didn't need to go on a dating app to get pussy. Let's just put it that way. I mean, I was living in Huntington Beach, California, and I made good money, and I was pretty huge. I was on MTV. I was on radio in 250 markets, New York, LA, everywhere. I was in every major market in the country, and the show was gigantic. And I did it in L.A., and every celebrity, every rock star, every band, Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Motley Crue, every single rock star you ever heard of did my show. Every athlete in the world did my show. We drank tons of booze. We smoked tons of weed. We ate pills. We did blow. We did everything. We were horrible people. And we behaved poorly, but it was fun as shit. And then I just remember I didn't have any trouble scoring chicks. Like when I would go do MTV, like Summer House, I would host that. I'd host the Rocket Jock Super Bowl. Believe me, if I was at the Summer House at the Shore, like, because I remember they made me go to Jersey once, to the Jersey Shore to do Summer House. And then I'd been to multiple Super Bowls for them. Every time we did anything with MTV, when we showed up at MTV, I mean, everybody got laid. I mean, just everybody. Like, because we were famous, and we were young and good-looking and crazy and wild, and we were on MTV. So chicks just, like, it was almost like, it was crazy, Hoppy. It was like I was a rock star or something, like, because I got just strange all the time. I mean, it was left and right. Now I'm like, I've been doing it so long, dude. I've been married 24 years. I never wanted to get married. I did. I met this hot chick in New York, and I started having a steamy affair with her. And then the next thing you knew, we were together pretty much every day. And then we were living together. And then I got her pregnant, and I had a son. And that, I never wanted kids. And then the next thing you knew, I got a son, which I thought was badass. And then the next thing you knew, I had a daughter. And so I've been through all of it. I've been, single and crazy and wild and trouble and partied my ass off and was just an outrageous freak. And then I got my shit together at some point and got married. And I think I had my first kid when I was 39, because I'm 58 now. And he's at San Diego State. He's a freshman there, almost done with his first year. And then my daughter's, she'll be a junior next year in high school. So I went from being nothing but trouble and crazy and addicted to whatever, man, rock and roll, women, partying, drinking, drugs, you name it, to, getting my shit together and doing what I do now. So like now I'm more like, I guess, old, but I still ball. I play ball 5 days a week with great players and NBA retired guys, Division I retired guys, all great players. I still do cool shit. I'm just not young anymore, right? Like, I still ball out and I still am crazy. I'm still fun, but I don't have any single left in me. I'm all hitched up, Hoppy, and I got kids and I got to pay for them to go to college, and it sucks ass.
Dude, you know what's funny about partying, though, is that especially when I worked for Rover in Cleveland and in my time at the Bone in Tampa, I would get recognized at bars, more in Cleveland, but enough in Tampa. And there's a lot of nights I don't remember or are very blurry. And it's fascinating to think that there were people that knew who I was. I didn't know who they were, but they were listeners, and that they just saw this side of me blackout drunk at the bar. And that whenever they think about me, if they do think about me, they think about me being blackout drunk at the bar. Like, if I go to a bar now, I'll have two or three drinks. But Scotty, man, 21 to 27, 26, I was
right.
Shots, beers. I was pretty similar to you in the amount of drinking I did. I would pregame. I would drink a bottle of wine before I went out, smoke a doobie. Now I'm a little more classier when I party. But
aren't you?
It's crazy.
Aren't you like? Because I can hear you're really tall, aren't you? Aren't
yeah,
you
I'm
like,
6'9". Well, I'm 6'8" and a half, but I round up to 6'9" on a dating app because it's more fun to say you're 6'9".
That's crazy. It's like I'm 6'4", 240.
Really?
And like I'm a big boy. Like, bro, I play basketball my whole life. And 6'8", I can work with that. Like, I play with guys that are 6'8", 6'9", 7-footer. I played with this Neil Quinn kid. He played at Richmond for the Spiders this year. They got eliminated in the A-10 tourney and didn't make the NCAAs. But he was, you know, 15 a game, 7-footer. I played with this guy that's 6'10", 300 pounds. We played at North Carolina Wilmington. I played with all these guys. Played at Seton Hall, Baylor, Washington, Boston College, BU. And I knew you were big. I knew you were a big boy. Like, Mafia, my producer, he's 6'5", 240.
Wow.
He's got me by about an inch. I know, yeah, but if I were 6'8", bro, because I'm already a good basketball player my whole life, if I was 6'8", I would be throwing down hammer dunks and tomahawk dunks in people's faces. And I'm already violent, physical, and big and heavy. Imagine me if I had another four and a half inches, bro. I wouldn't even leave the fucking house, bro.
Dude,
all I'd do is play basketball.
I never knew how tall you were because I've never met you.
Yeah.
We've been friends, but I've never met you. But I did not know you were that tall.
Yeah, I'm 6'4", bro, and I'm a big boy. Like, I play power forward. I play you know, pillar to post, low block. Post to post, baseline, cutter. I'm a screener, a rebounder, a banger, a fouler. I can shoot corner pocket deep threes. I can finish with a finger roll at the 10. I used to be able to dunk, but when I got old, you lose your legs and you lose your and you get a gut, right? So I used to be 6'4", 180, 185, and I'd fly right down the lane and throw it down easy. Like, you could dunk easy at 6'8 and a half. I could dunk easy. I wasn't 240. So when I got fat and old and my legs were shot, now I can't touch the rim, but I can get to the rim. Like, I can get up to the rim. I just can't throw it over it anymore like I used to. Like, once you get old, you're fucked. Like, you lose your hops. White men can't jump. Trust me, when you're 50, it's over. Like, when most people at 45, it's over. I still play every morning, 6 a.m., 5 days a week with just savages at great players. Like, players, if I mentioned them, you would know every one of them played Division I and NBA. They're all former star players, and they all live in New York City, right? And I play with them because I'm really good. I'm the worst one of the lot. There's probably 15 or 20 of us in this club that we play. It's a bunch of guys that we're all friends and we all know each other. And my kids, my daughter's a basketball star, right? And she played for this guy when she was a little girl. She played on the boys' teams. That's how good she is. And he let her play with the boys. He was the first guy to ever let a girl play with the boys in New York City. She's that good. And so he played at Villanova, and he played for Steve Lapis at Villanova. And I, you know, he invited me to play there, and I've been playing there ever since. And I'm the first one there, but I'm still a really good player. It's just the only thing is I'm, you know, I had open heart surgery in November, so
yeah.
My heart exploded, and I almost died. I was 30 minutes from the morgue, and the guy saved my life in surgery. I had to wait 5 months, and now I'm back playing again. And the only difference is that once I got older and I started playing, like, I'm slower and fatter, and, you know, laterally I can't do anything. I can't guard some fast guard, some kid, some young kid. But when it comes to being big, like you are, I can play that game. Like, I'm, you know, you come in the lane, I'll let you know who I am. Like, I'm, you know, I'm big and strong, and I'm heavy, and you can't move me. I'm 240. Like, I post up, and I know how to put the ball in the hole. So, like, basketball for me is, like, my favorite thing. Like, so I bet on the last 8 games. So Saturday I hit both. The Elite Eight game Saturday, then Sunday I hit both Elite Eight games. Monday I hit both women's games, Iowa and UConn. And last night, Tuesday, I hit both spreads in the Indiana State NIT semifinal, and I hit the Seton Hall semifinal over Georgia. And I've hit 8 straight spreads in these Elite Eight games and the NIT semifinals. And now tomorrow, I think, is the NIT final with Indiana State and Seton Hall. And then Saturday is the Final Four in Glendale. I'm going to broadcast, right, on Zoom. So, like, if people go on my ex or whatever, at Scott Farrell, you can see the link to Saturday night at 6 o'clock. I'm doing a like father, like son. So my son's going to sit with me all night from 6 until both games are over. And we're doing an uncensored, like, alt broadcast of the Final Four. And we're going to just talk shit and fuck with people. And then my other gambling partner that I work with on PharrellandEvents.com, who's a savant better, we call him the prophet, he's going to come on and fuck with us too. So, and fans everywhere can get on there for nothing, and they can chat with us throughout the night. Like, I used to do shows like this when I worked for Howard Stern. I would catch the game with Pharrell.
Good old days.
They were like a big hit. Like, I'd get 20,000 people on there watching a game with me, and they would turn down the volume on the TV and just turn me on, and I was, you know, uncensored and unglued and unhinged. And trust me, it'll be no different than anything you and I do. Like, every time I'm on with you, it's cool. This is like that. It's a lot cooler when there's two big games on and we're just fucking drinking rum and smoking bong ribs and fucking cussing and shredding refs. So I'm doing that this Saturday night, so everybody should check it out.
You know what's crazy is your show on Howard 101 was some of the best radio I ever heard. And I called your show, I think it was 2009. It was the last year LeBron was on the Cavaliers the first time. And I was in Charlotte visiting family, and I went to a Bobcats game, and they beat the that was the team with Shaq, I believe. I don't know. It was so long ago. And I called your show, and I made a point like, oh, I think the Cavs are done. Let's go Bobcats. And you're like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. This is the fourth game of the season. And then you hung up on me, and it was the greatest moment. I was like 14 or 15, and it made me appreciate your show even more. And what I find fascinating about your days on Howard 101 is there's, and I think this is a blessing for you, Scott, there's very little of it online. Like, there's a few clips on YouTube of Howard playing your clip when the Penguins won the cup 15 years ago.
Right.
But you got to be pretty lucky that, like, I'm not saying you would get canceled, but you were so wild on that show, and it's almost like an ancient relic. You can't find any of it online. Like, you can find old ONA shows, old Howard, some of Bubba. But, dude, I can't find any of that show online, and I think it's a blessing for you, to be honest.
Well, it's weird because, like, you're right. And it's never been something that I, like, cared about. Like, I was never sitting there going, you know, I'm going to tape every show and keep every show.
Yeah.
I think I have, like, so what I have tons of Stern Show tapes of me. We used to, you know, tape them. And he would give me cassettes of all the shows. It was I was on hours every night, and I would get millions of tapes. So I had millions of tapes of me doing Stern, but they're hard to find online. My days of doing Thrashers play-by-play in the NHL, their expansion season in 99, that's also a literally near impossibility to find a clip of me calling their games, because the people that ran it, at the time, the guy that runs the Hurricanes now, Don Waddell, he was the GM. He wanted no part of me. And he was just like, we're firing this guy. I'm not fucking having this lunatic. He's drunk. And,
you know,
and I used to drink in the press box. So I didn't care. They sucked dick. They lost every night. We won 11 games the whole fucking year out of 82. So I said one night we were taking it in the ass. That was my kid for me. But all I know is they're hard to come by. I've never been to, frankly, give a shit. Like, I don't have, like, CBS Sports Radio. I did, what, after I left Stern, I went there for 8 or 9 years, and I did a million shows, and I just don't care about those shows. And now I've been at Sports Grid for 5 years, whatever it is, and I don't care about those shows either. I do know that, like, I've never been one to, like, really worry about any of that stuff. Like, I like doing it. I've always liked doing it. I like that people dig it, that people like it, that they think it's cool, that it's kind of transcended time. I'm old now, but I'm still cool, right? So when I was young and doing it, when I was 18 and I started, and now I'm 58, like, it has gone through 41 years, and people still the dad, the grandpa, the son, the child, they all listened to it and grew up with it. You put it, you liked it, you dug it. I think this show is as cool now as it was then. It's funny, it's edgy, it's different, it's unique. I'm doing the same stuff gambling-wise that I did 30 years ago, but then everyone treated me like I was selling heroin to children. So I was just picking, I was picking bets, right? Like I was betting and spreads and money lines and
yeah.
stuff. And I do the same things today. I just, I never thought I mattered that much that, you know, like, I'll tell you what, I was on Letterman twice, right? And I'm friends with Dave, and he brought me on twice. And I have both of those shows on VHS tape. Like, I have them on VHS tape. Who the fuck has a VHS tape player anymore besides no one? So the only two episodes of me on Letterman are on a VHS tape. And it's embarrassing. But I have, like, all of it, millions of shows. And those shows, the Letterman shows, the Stern years, the CBS years. I have them in giant crates, right? I kept them. And then maybe one day, when I'm long gone and retired and dead, and I'm sitting around having three fingers of scotch, I'll plop in a tape or two and listen to what I used to be like and how crazy I was. I've never really cared about shows. I don't listen to them. I swear to God, I've never listened to shows I've done. I just do them. I just do the shows. I don't even remember shit, Hoppy. I don't remember anything. I just do it. You know what I mean? Sit around like rubbing my nuts and thinking I'm special. I just think that I've been lucky to work with people that got it, that dug it, and that let me do it. And then I had a lot of opposition, a lot of problems, a lot of firings. I've been fired 20 times. I'm sure I'll get fired again. I get fired when the wind blows. I don't care. I don't fucking listen to people that are idiots. I listen to people that are really smart, that have great ideas, that like to do cool things, and that make me better. And anyone else can eat my asshole.
You know, it's funny. I have my radio trade school that I went to. There was this board op at 670 The Score. And this right. is when you're at CBS Sports Radio, and they would air your show right. overnight. And he was this like overweight sports Chicago radio, just sports fan nerd. His name was Rick, and he hated you. And I used to like defend you in class and be like, "I love Scott Farrell." And he's like, "That guy is the worst show I've ever heard. He's so awful." And it's funny how like I feel like cool people like you, but I feel like the sports nerd that wants to listen to that just sports radio vibe just despises you, bro.
Yeah, listen, it's real simple. Fat Rick, suck a dick. Because I've accomplished everything in the history of radio that one could ever accomplish. I have worked on the greatest radio networks, the greatest radio station in the history of man. I have worked for the greatest programmers in history. I worked for the greatest bosses, Mel Karmazin in history, the guy that made Howard Stern, Don Imus, Owen A., Pharrell. I've worked for Howard Stern. Like, are you kidding me? Like, Fat Rick can have a fucking sandwich of mayonnaise on his fucking lip. He can fucking die for all I care. I love people that hate me. I'd rather have you hate me than dislike me.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about, like, I've never sat around worrying about what others thought of me. I mean, I was so crazy on the radio, Hoppy. You know that.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot possibly be as crazy as I am and listen to anybody's bullshit. If I would have listened, you know what Imus told me one day? He goes, I was in Vegas with him partying, doing narcotics.
Imus?
And he said to me, he goes, yeah, Imus, he was an animal. Just trust me when I tell you, he was an animal.
Dude, I've heard about this, but like when I listened to Imus, he was all clean and sober. That's crazy that you got to party with him.
This was before then. Right?
Yeah.
Like, so back in the day, and, you know, way before that, he was an animal, partied like an animal. And he told me one day, and I partied with him like an animal. We should have been in jail. And he said to me, he goes, don't ever fucking listen to any of them. Tell them to fuck off. You're number one in New York. Tell them to suck your dick. And I was stupid enough to listen to him. And I told every single boss I ever worked for, the day I quit CBS and Infinity and Westwood One syndicated for Ellen Events to go do NHL play-by-play for the Thrashers and work for Ted Turner, I announced it on Letterman, and I walked on the stage, and my boss, the head of CBS and Westwood One, said, "You cocksucker." And I go, "Eat a fucking dick, Joel. Suck my fucking balls." I go, "I quit. Eat a fucking dick." So I have, bottom line is, I work for everyone and everything. You can't possibly, like he told me, don't listen to anybody. I never listened to anybody for like 25 years and maybe 30, let's say, because I've done it 41 years. So I'll say I'm going to put it at 25. The first 25 years of my career, and then there's a Mendoza line right there. From 25 to 41, I've stopped arguing with people. I've stopped telling people to fuck off. I've stopped arguing with bosses and suits. And I don't hang out with them. I don't go to the Christmas party. I don't have nothing to do with anybody. But back in the day when I was years 1 through 25, I told them all to blow me. And I was nothing but trouble. They got me fired like 20 times. So, you can't be what I was and worry about some guy that doesn't like me anywhere. Like, whether it's a listener, whether it's a colleague, whether it's some guy in Chicago that thinks he's better than me, or some guy in radio over here or over there, Seattle or otherwise, Tampa, L.A., doesn't matter. If you sit around worrying about what people think about you in this business, you'll never make it in this business.
What was Don Imus like off air? Was he very much like his character on air, or was there a nice side to Don Imus?
Well, he was he was a fantastic guy, right? Like, he was really cool, and he was very liberal and very open and very honest and told it like it was. And back in the day, like, trust me, everyone knows. Like, one day Mel Karmazin told me, he said, Mel ran Sirius XM. He was the CEO. He was the CEO at CBS. Most powerful guy in radio history. His son, Craig, runs all of Good Karma Radio now, knows all those ESPN stations. Dad said to me one day, he said, quote, "I'm on an elevator. It was the day before Thanksgiving." And he goes, "You should go back to doing drugs. You were a lot funnier then." And I said, What did you say to me? And he went, "You and Imus were way better when you were on drugs. When you guys got sober, you weren't as funny." He goes, "Have a nice Thanksgiving." I said, "All right, I'll get back on the coke right after Thanksgiving. I'll start drinking again for you, Mel. Good to see you. Say hi to the wife and kids." But look, Imus used to party like a rock star back in the day, and everyone knows it. It's not like I'm breaking some kind of story here. This is open season law here. Everyone knew that he partied. Back in the day when he was young and he was on the radio in New York, he was an animal. He was an absolute animal. I went to Vegas with him for like a 3-day thing. And, I never even took a shower. I was lit for 3 days. I don't remember nothing. I partied with that guy hard. I knew him to be super cool. Like, I knew Howard same way. I went to his wedding, everything else. I'm friends with him. I look up to him. I'm honored that I got to work for him. It was the greatest gig I ever had. I love him to this day. He's a very funny guy, and he's fun to hang out with, but he doesn't really hang out with people that much. So, like, I went to some parties with him and some weddings and things of this nature, and, he'd have a birthday party, he'd have a Christmas year, and he would actually spend a few minutes with you as your friend, talking to you and laughing. And he was close with my wife, and we were close with he and Beth, and it was really cool, and it was very awesome. But I definitely did way more damage with Imus. I had way more fun with Don Imus. Like, I think Howard, I loved working for Howard more than I never worked for Don. You understand?
Yeah.
I worked with him. I was on WFAN in New York, so he did mornings, I did nights, and I was huge. And, Mike and Mad Dog hated me, but I was number one in New York every single rating book for the entire time I was there. So they can all eat a dick. And the bottom line is, Imus was the only one that treated me good. So I kind of gravitated toward him. And I, you know, he was a legend. And meanwhile, here I was taking shit from all these people, and the media in New York was attacking me and saying I was bad for radio. And I was this horrible person. I was serving people alcohol and drugs and pills and coke and hookers and gambling and playing heavy metal music. It was just such a disaster. Meanwhile, every 18 to 34-year-old kid in New York listened to me religiously, and I was the king in my radio. And so Imus was way more fun to hang out with because he was, like, more liberal about it. He'd, like, go out with you. He'd go out and get fucked up with you. He'd go out and drink with you or do bad things with you. Howard would never do that. Like, he was, you know, out the door and in the limo, and Ronnie was taking him home. He was very focused on, and driven by his career and not fucking around with it, the help or with anybody else for that matter. But I, you know, the best honor of my life was working for him. And I just never really, I knew him like off the air only in spurts, right? Like, you know, the wedding he invited me to, the birthday parties, the Christmas parties, things like that. I was close with him, but I was way closer with Imus through the years because I had, you know, I was on WFAN with him and Howard was on K-Rock. So eventually I went to NEW with like Opie and Anthony. I did mornings against Howard. I was competing with him, so I was the enemy. So I was never that with Don. Like, I knew Don to just be a cool dude. And then he got old and grumpy, and he got into, like, the cancer ranch and all that, saving kids and everything, which I condone. I think it's great what he did for raising money for cancer for kids and stuff. But when he got older, he, you know, he stopped partying, and he just, you know, all he did was that cowboy shit and the ranch shit. And I live in New York City, bro. I'm not a fucking cowboy.
Yeah, I like listening to old Imus from like back in the day. There's like this account that uploads every show ever. But there's this weird vibe. He's always like a dick to everybody. He was a dick to Bernie. He's a dick to Sid Rosenberg.
Right.
He was a dick to Charles McCord. And it's kind of uncomfortable to listen to at times because like I'm a big fan of Imus. I like watching his old shows on YouTube. I listen to it. And everybody right. will be getting along. And then he'll just begin picking on Charles McCord. And you're like, the guy didn't do anything, bro. It's weird.
Yeah, well, just so you know, like a lot of it was, he was razzing him. Like a lot of it was just on-air shtick. Like,
yeah.
I know for a fact, like I'm good friends with all those guys. Like obviously Bernie died and I'm good friends with Sid. I've known Sid for 30 plus years. And we're good pals, and I've done everything with Sid and radio, you name it. I've done shows with him. I've done everything with him. I think that I am certain that if you had Sid on your show, he would tell you that
I've had him on.
You ever had this, well, you've had him on.
Me and him made the news because that was when he replaced Imus in 2018 right. when they didn't want to pay Imus anymore. I had right. Sid on, so yeah, I've had him on before.
Well, listen, he'll tell you that I know for a fact. He'll tell you that that Imus made him. He like you know being on the Imus show in the morning doing the updates and everything. It made Sid huge. It gave Sid the springboard, I believe, the diving board to his success today. He's the number one morning show in New York. He's on WABC, does politics and sports and life. He does everything, and he did Bernie for a long time. Bernie, I was good friends with Bernie, and obviously Sid. And I'm telling you, Imus made him, put him on the map. Like when you work with Don Imus in mornings on The Fan in New York, and you're on the number one morning show on TV and radio in New York every day, and you're sitting on that set, and you're doing updates or doing anything for him, and he's making fun of you or giving you shit or blowing you shit or talking shit about you, it's still all a real positive thing for your career. I think you know, Sid's been incredible. His success is a great story, but I'd be willing to bet my life that he knows how important Don was to him.
What is your relationship with Opie and Anthony? I know you had your war with them. Did you ever make up with them?
Yeah, I made up with Greg and with Jim. I never had any chance to make up with Anthony. They didn't like me because I worked for Howard. That was all that was. It was all blown out of proportion. he was their enemy. Their, you know, their career enemy was Howard Stern, right? Fair enough. And you know that. Everyone knows that. So imagine what they thought when I worked with them, and I loved them. And then I went to work for Howard at Sirius XM, and I was going to work for them on their, I forget the name of their channel, what it was on XM. They had some channel on XM. I don't remember the name of it. But it didn't work out, right? And then, like, Howard hired me to go to the Howard Stern channels and do, you know, Howard 101. And that really pissed them off, fair enough. But, you know, it's real simple. Like, I saw one of them one night at the Sirius XM, and I'm, like I told you, bro, you don't want to fuck with me. I'm 6'4", 240 pounds. I will fucking truck you. And I'm twice the size of that guy. I'm twice the size of all three of them. Jim's up dick, Greg's up to my tits, and Anthony's up to my belly button. And I'm not afraid of some little fucking dude up to my dick. I will fucking hurt you. I am enormous. I'm you're 6'8". You don't take shit from fucking guys that are 5'4". Shut the fuck up. So I was always like, I saw him one night, I was like, let's go. Fucking right now. We'll do it right here in the fucking hallway. I'll fucking split your head open. And they never talk shit when I was right in front of their face. Let's hear you talk shit now. Here I am. I don't need nothing. So that was how it was back then. It was like tense, and it was fuck you, everyone hated each other. Then one day, Obie and I both got gigs on Westwood One to do podcasts, right? And he had me on his show.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked through everything, and we were, you know, instantly friends again. It was instantaneous. We were just like, I'm sorry the way it went down. It is what it is. I had a living. I don't give a fuck what you guys think of me. Like, I got to make a living, and Howard Stern offered me a job. I'm taking it. You guys can all eat my asshole. Like, I don't care what you think of me. Say whatever you want. And, like, you have to understand, like, I think those guys were great, right? I always thought they were funny as shit, and they were awesome. It was one of the greatest shows I ever heard in my life. I've worked with the best talent in the world, bar none in radio, bar none. I've worked with the best, all of them. Phil Henry, all of them. I've worked with every show. And that was clearly one of the great shows. And I thought Opie and Anthony and Greg Norton and Jim Norton were fantastic. And they were incredible. I loved working with them, and I loved it. And then when it got ugly, it was what it was. And I wasn't taking shit from anybody. I can guarantee you that. And then finally, one day, we became friends again. And then I've seen Jim a million times since. And I'm cool with him, too. I've been at, you know, like, I went to Florentine's wedding. He was there, and we got along great. Everything's fine. I never saw him again as long as he lived. But I know he's friends with Shuley and Bob Levy and Mike Morse and all the guys that do the bullshit show, the BS show, and the Uncle Rico show. I know he does those shows all the time. So he's friends with all them. And I have no problem with the guy. And I've never really had a problem with him. But if he wants a fucking problem, I'll give him a fucking problem. Like, you know, it's real simple. Like, everyone talks shit until someone fucking smacks them in the face.
Yeah, right.
Like, everyone's a badass until you run into someone big like you or me. I'm fucking a problem, okay? That little dude ain't moving me. He needs a couple buddies with him to fuck with me.
Well, it's like, it's funny, Scott.
I got in the basketball fight. It's real simple.
Yeah.
I saw John Flaherty, the Flash from the Yankees Yes Network, and he goes, I saw him at the store, and he goes, hey, Pharrell, I heard you got in a fight. I go, yeah, I got in a fight, Flash, playing ball. He goes, what happened? I said, well, it took five guys to get me off of this kid, and I was beating the shit out of him, Flash. And that's about the gist of it. And he goes, five guys? And I go, yeah, I was really angry. I said, so if the other guy wants problems with me, he should probably bring a couple friends.
Well, you know,
I could be a problem.
You know what's funny? I worked for Mike Calta, aka Cowhead, for 7 years, and everything was great.
I know him.
And then we had our like breakup. He was mad that I left to go to another job, even though he said it was okay if I left. And right. I saw him like 8 months ago at a Bucks game, and I was a little high, allegedly, so I was confident. And I was like, hey, Mike, how's it going? And I waved at him, and he just glared at me. It was so uncomfortable, bro. And it was that funny thing where it's like all those shock jocks talk big and bad behind the microphone. But then when you're a tall presence and you say hi to them, they almost always hide. You know who else I pissed off in October because I pulled the ghost move on him was Bubba the Love Sponge. I was going to maybe join his show. I was going to go on air and do a tell all about my breakup with Calta, but I ended up doing it in February with Drew Lane from Drew and Mike on my podcast, which it worked out better that way. Here's what I'm saying. So I was emailing Bubba and I was supposed to maybe join his show, but then I got this job that's full-time in radio that I keep low-key that I don't talk about, and it was paying more. Right. And Bubba never offered me an actual job, and it was so funny. Bubba went off on me on air, and I'm like, I made it. I pissed off Bubba the Love Sponge because he never offered me a job. It was hilarious.
Look, I love Bubba, and I have a good friendship with him. I always loved him. I think he's hilarious.
He is.
You know, he's a trip. And I know he never liked that guy. And the other one called it. That's fine. Like, I don't get involved in all that shit. I just know that, like, you're 6'8" and a half. You got to be. How much you weigh?
Between 250 to 290. I fluctuate throughout life.
Okay, so you know, listen, it's real simple. When you're 6'8" and a half and 275, 280, no one's fucking with you. And when you're 6'4", 240, I am a fucking problem. Like, listen, I'm a problem. Like, you want to fuck with me? Like, I've been in everything. And let's just be honest. Guys don't like hearing this. I ain't afraid of no little dudes.
Yeah,
they hate to hear it. I ain't afraid of no little dude. Little dude, you post, you got some little dude guarding me. I'm gonna fucking torch him. Like, I just go right through little dudes. I don't have any problem with little dudes. Little dudes, tough guys. Everyone's tough. Everyone's tough until you get fucking cracked in the mouth.
Yeah,
like, I don't fuck with some guy 6'9", 6'10", 7 foot. I'm 6'4". You're 5 inches bigger than me and 30 pounds heavier than me. That's a problem. Okay, that's where I come from. Like, size is everything. Like, it's the same way in the NFL, right? Like, why is every guy in the NFL up front in the trenches 350 pounds? Well, it's for a fucking reason.
Didn't you work with Mancow's Morning Madhouse?
Yeah, I did that too. I did that in Chicago for like 1 year. I did it, and I used to be, you know, tight with Eric. And he did a great show in Chicago. And what's weird is I did it there for like 6 months with him, and because we had the same agent. And I had been fired for indecency in Miami, and the FCC sued me. And I had, you know, legal problems. And I won the case, but it took 3 years to, like, you know, for it to go and be done with. And it ruined my career, and so I didn't have a job. And then my agent put me with Eric, and I did Mancow's Morning Madhouse in Chicago on Q101. It was the number one show in Chicago. And so I was on there to be the antithesis of him, right? Like, I was there to give him shit and to be crazy and to get him riled up and to argue with him and to basically fuck with him. And it went great, and then I moved to Atlanta to do, somebody offered me a ton of money to do a midday show. So I did Mancow from Chicago for 6 months. Then I did it for 6 months from Atlanta on, you know, just on a ISDN line. And I was just in the studio, and I'm good enough to do radio that I've done it so much, bro, that I can do the timing thing. Doesn't throw me off. I don't need to be in a room with you to be good. I know how to do shit and time it right and jump in when I'm, when I got an opening and shit like that. So I worked with him for like a year, and it was great. And then, you know, at the end, he didn't like me being in Atlanta, and that was the end of it. He's just like, I don't want to keep doing this. And I'm like, no problem. See you later. I never saw the guy again in my life. I know that I have no idea. I think he still does something in Chicago or something.
No, he's on. He's actually out of a job. He's just doing like videos online. It's bizarre because I grew up listening to him. He's one of my biggest influences. I loved listening to him growing up. I love Madhouse Morning Madhouse. And it's crazy, dude, how he went from like the king of Chicago to like, it's like, where's he at? It's weird.
Well, listen, so one day, so he used to like throw, back in the day when we did shows, we used carts, right? So he had all the sound on carts instead of digital, like on a computer. It was done with carts and tapes. And he had these giant racks with like fucking thousands of carts, and he used all of his sound bites and drops he did on carts. And he would sit there and he would pull them out and put them on the air real quick. He was really good at it. And he was magical with it. It was almost like he was a musician playing a piano. He could do 100 miles an hour, play Mozart or Rachmaninoff or whatever. And then he could fucking cook eggs on with his left hand, and he could be signing autographs with his right. The guy could really work a radio show. And then he would like throw carts at people, like when they, I don't know, would fuck up or whatever on the show, or screw it up or make a mistake, or you know, make the show go off the rails or screw it up for even 5 seconds, he'd get mad. And I told him one day, he threw one at me, and I said, if you ever hit me with one of those things, I'm gonna beat the fucking shit out of you. I'm gonna fucking jump over that fucking that little divider. I'm gonna fuck you up. So don't ever throw one at me, Romeo, because I'm twice your size, and I will fuck you up, and I'll fuck your wife. Trust me. Don't throw one of them at me. You're gonna have a problem on your hands, because I'm like fucking crazy. And like I'd see him throwing them at people, and I'd be like, God damn, these people take his shit. I ain't taking shit from nobody. So it was weird. I like him a lot as a talent. I thought he was a really funny guy. I used to go out with him to dinner and shit, and to restaurants and party, and we'd go eat and drink our balls off, and he was a lot of fun. Like, I went to his home a few times in Chicago, and I lived it up with him. When we were together, we lived it up, and I enjoyed my time with him. And I mean that truly. I enjoyed it. But I think you're talking about, like, two big-headed talents that just couldn't coexist, I don't think, long-term. It was just like a short one-year run type thing. But it was, I guarantee you, he never forgot me. And I didn't even know that he was the business, because I just don't give a fuck. I don't, you know, I haven't seen the guy in, I don't even remember when I did it. It was like 2000, maybe it was 2003 or something like that. And I know that it's been that long, so it's been 20 years since I've seen him. I saw him one day in St. Martin on the beach. Believe it or not, I ran into him in the Caribbean. And it was weird because he thought, like, he was so shocked to see me that I think he thought, like, I was stalking him or something. He gave me this look like, what the fuck are you doing here? I'm like, yo, my lawyer has a mansion on this bitch, bro. I've been coming here for 20 years. I go, I hang out at Orient Beach. I've been coming to St. Martin longer than you fucking been married or anything else. So, like, I saw him, and we just said hi, but he's like, what are you doing here? I'm like, yeah, I come here all the time, bro. So, I don't know. I haven't seen the guy ever since, not once. So,
do you?
Thing. Like, just somebody in my life at one time that I had fun with, and then it ended, and I didn't really give a shit.
Well, I brought that up because Ken Smith, a.k.a. L. Roker, when I made the post, he said to say hi.
Yeah, listen, I love that guy. All those guys are really funny, and I thought the show was great. I know Abe Cannon is...
Abe's the man.
He's doing a show, I think, in Sacramento now. It was great. All those guys were... Eric was great. Everyone was funny. I think there was some chick on the show, too. Like, they all thought I was fucking crazy and nuts. And like, they all thought, who does this guy think he is? And,
yeah.
Like, I had already been enormous in radio, so I didn't have to show my creds to anybody. Like, you said, oh, who does this guy think he is? I'm like, I've never been that guy. I'm not a dick to people. I'm cool to everyone. And if you can't handle my, I guess, presence or art in the room, then, you know, have a fucking sandwich.
Do you
call your mommy? Go have a drink. I don't worry about, honestly, dude, what people think of me. Like I said, if you worry about what people think of you in this business, you ain't going to make it. You ain't going to last.
Do you think him throwing carts at people, I'm not saying that's the reason he's not in radio right now, but do you think some of his ways of treating people maybe burned him in the end?
I don't. Like, look, I just seen it happen, and I was there, so I said it. And it's no big deal. I just saw it happen once, and I don't know if he was like, if he did it all the time. I don't know. See, I was only there for 6 months. So I'm sitting there one day, I see it happen, and I'm like, bitch, you do not want to throw one of them things at me. You hit me with one of those things, and it is gone. And I said to him, like, bro, you should pick your who you're throwing them to. Don't put me in that mix. And then all I know is, that's it. There's nothing to the story. It's just simple. I told you, I don't have any clue whatsoever, not one iota. I have no idea why he's not doing it anymore. I have no clue. I've never, like I said, I'm not lying to you. I haven't seen a guy in 20 years. I don't care, and I don't know what he's doing. You told me.
Yeah. No, I got
first,
you.
That's the first I've heard of it. I don't have any. I have nothing to do with him. So, like, I knew him when we were, 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, I loved him, and I thought it was fun, and it was great. And I had a blast, and it was cool when I did it. And then when it ended, I was like, see you later. Take it easy. Bye. Next gig, I mean, you've had gigs, and then you move on and do something else. It's no different. Like I told you, I've been through 20, 30 jobs. Over 40 years, I don't have any. I don't sit around crying like a bitch when things end. When things end, it's no different than a relationship with a chick or whatever. You break up, and it's like, okay, what are you going to do? Go home and cry? Or are you going to go out and have some whiskey?
Well, it's funny. Like, I saw an old coworker that does afternoon radio at my first radio job at 102.5 The Bone. And, like, I saw him every day for 7 years, and then I haven't seen him in 2 years. And I saw him in downtown St. Pete on Saturday, and I was pretty lit, and he was pretty lit. And there's always a weird vibe when you see old coworkers, like, because you kind of remember why you're not at the job anymore. Because it was kind of like, I wasn't romanticizing my past at the Bone,
right.
But I've been thinking about it lately. And then when I saw the coworker, we talked for about 5 minutes. The first 2.5 minutes was amazing. And in the last 2.5 minutes, he was sort of pounding his chest about how great they're doing. And I was like, right. See ya. I'll probably never see you again. It's really weird. Yeah, it's weird when you see people from your past.
Yeah, I don't even, I'll tell you what gets even weirder is when you get older and you don't remember who the fuck they are.
Dude, I have that all the time. People will recognize me and be like, oh yeah, you worked this promotions event with Calta in 2016. I was the owner of this nightclub. And I'm like, okay. And I feel like such a dick or a prima donna not remembering people. My go-to line, Scotty, whenever someone goes, what's up, Hoppy? Remember me? I go, oh yeah, what's up, dude? Every time, if I don't know the person, if you're listening to my podcast and I've said, what's up, dude, to you, it's because I don't know who you are. Every time, Scotty, I will go, what's up, dude? Good to see you.
Same thing, yeah. I mean, you'll see it only gets worse. It only gets worse later. Like, I saw a guy the other day, I did a show I think it's going to air soon, and it's on this enormous podcast. The podcast is really big, and I don't follow it. I don't care. I don't know these things. I just know that it's big, right? I know that it was a big deal doing it. They had me do it for a reason. And I went on the show and I did it, and they tape it. They do them like 3-4 weeks in advance, right? So I don't think mine is aired yet. And all I know is I didn't know when they asked me to do it who was on the show. I just said, they told me to do it. I was told to do it, and I did it. And I said, all right, I'll do it. And then I went and did it, and then I recognized one of the guys. It turns out I knew all three of them, and I didn't. When I got the call to do it, I just said, yeah, all right, whatever I got to do, I got to do. So I went and did it, and I knew all three of the guys. One of them I had worked with, I've known for 30 years. And then the other two I had worked with at Sirius. So when I was at Howard Stern, I knew both of these guys worked at the at Sirius XM and some other divisions. Like they were in, like they were doing other types of shows and like comedy or, you know, politics, whatever it was. And well, I think one of them was a political show. The other one was the comedy show. And then the other guy, he's worked at CBS for like 35 years. And I knew him. And he had produced my show before in New York back in the day when I was on in L.A. via New York, right? My show was in L.A. and I was on The Fan in New York. All those years I lived in L.A. And this kid ran the show. He ran the board back then. So it was really bizarre to run into like three dudes. And I was just glad that I remembered them. Like, I was like, holy shit. I remember I told stories of all three of them, which is a really good sign, Hoppy, as to not have early for Alzheimer's. There's nothing worse than not remembering shit or having no clue who someone is. And it's embarrassing and it's troubling. Like, I always worry, I don't want to get that Alzheimer's shit. And I've had a lot of family members and stuff get it. And the fact that I remembered these three dudes and had stories to tell about them, I thought was a really good sign. Because I've done a lot of partying in my day.
Yeah.
And I probably don't deserve to remember at least, I'd say, 60% of the shit I've done.
Scotty, what do you think about the Radio Hall of Fame? Do you think you'll ever make it?
I don't. I have no idea. I doubt it. I would never know how it works. I think I was maybe too much of a troublemaker, too much of a shock jock, too much of a, you know, antichrist. And I had, you know, problems with FCC and, you know, lawyers and, you know, radio stations getting sued and stuff like that. I think I was too controversial. Maybe that's my guess. I know that they put in a lot of people. And it seems like most of them are really, like, good people.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not sure I fall into that category of being good people. I think in my career, I was kind of the problem child of radio.
Yeah, you were. Yes, you were, Scotty.
You know what I mean? Like, I was the bad seed. So, you know, I always said the bad seed, the broken seed, the bad apple with a bad apple.
Yeah.
Bad day, bad bob, bad day, bad bro. So I was such a bad seed that, you know, my guess would be it's unlikely that I would get in there. But, you know, if they ever called one day and said I was getting in, I'd keel over. I'd probably keel over. I don't, you know, I wouldn't know how to react to that. I think it would be probably pretty cool and pretty humbling to get in there. But believe me, you, when I tell you, Hoppy, I never lived my life for that. I never did my career so that when I started that I would, I wanted to be Howard Cosell. I didn't want to be in the Radio Hall of Fame. I say that with respect. Like, I don't have anything against the Radio Hall of Fame and all the people that are in it. I have nothing but respect for everybody that's in this business. You know that. I still do shows with you, you know, every few years. I've always been friends with you. I'm friends with everybody. But I never did my career to be honored with awards and be in a Hall of Fame and stuff like that. I did it to be, I wanted to be great, and I wanted to be unique and different, and I wanted to be cool, and I wanted to leave my mark, and I think I've accomplished all of that. So I really don't care anymore what anybody does to me in terms of shows and jobs and career-wise. Like, if it ends tomorrow, it ends tomorrow. I'm comfortable with it ending. I'm pretty much doing it now to put my kids through college. I don't do it for any other reason. I don't need to do shows to prove to anybody what I'm capable of. I think I've already done all that. So I'm comfortable with it as it is. I like doing what I do, and if it ends, it ends. And I'm not a bitch, so I'm not going to sit around crying about it. I'll probably go play basketball if it ends, and it could end tomorrow. I don't put any stock in, I've never really liked, to be honest with you, working for the man. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
If I had my druthers, I'd do my own thing and never have to answer to anybody. I've always had to worked for big companies and big radio stations and big, you know, syndicators and big TV networks. And I had millions of bosses and agents and all this other shit. And it's all just, it's all bullshit is what it is. All, you know, having to suck people's balls and shit. And it's just all bullshit. I wish I didn't have to work for the man, to be honest with you, but I have pretty much my whole career. So I don't really have any control over whether or not I'm going to last. You know, I'll be 59 in July. People say, how long do you want to do it? I really just want to do it at most 6 more years until I'm 65, and then I'll be done. I'm not a guy that wants to hang on and be on when I'm 70, 80. Imus did it. Stern's 69. I know Steve Summers was my boy at the Fan. He's still doing it. He's like 73, 74 years old. I'm not that dude, bro. I'm not that dude. I'm comfortable if it ends tomorrow, and I'm comfortable at 65 if it ends. I'm not going to do this shit when I'm 70, 75, 80. No fucking way. I'm too cool. I'm too cool to keep doing. I've already done it 41 years. I don't really owe anybody shit.
Can you believe we've been doing this show for an hour and 9 minutes? 69 minutes, like my height.
That's a perfect number to end the show on. 69, everyone's favorite number.
Scotty, this has been a blast, bro. Like, I feel like the last two interviews we did was more like me asking things, and I feel like this was more us talking as friends. This has been a blast, bro.
Yeah, I love you, bro. I'm always rooting for you. Everything you're doing is cool. I've always seen your shit everywhere. I've always stayed in touch. I've always supported what you're up to.
I think
you're a great dude. I love you, and I wish you nothing but success and happiness and greatness in your life. And I'm always pulling for you, bro.
Scotty, just know that we talked about things before the show, and if those things were to happen, that would be very big. And I'm a very big guy, so I expect big things to happen.
Well, I think it will, and I think great things are in store for you for sure, for certain. I'm behind whatever you're doing 1,000,000%. Check out, if people want to do that Saturday night thing, it's this Saturday night for the Final Four. It's at 6 o'clock Eastern. Go on my ex at Scott Farrell. It's on there. It's on LinkedIn. It's on Facebook. Just look me up, whatever. And then Saturday night, just click that link and put in the passcode or whatever, and you can watch the games with us, and it's going to be completely lit and uncensored and fun and crazy, and people can chat with me during the games.
It's so funny. You're going to be live on LinkedIn. That's the one platform I don't put my podcast on, because I have two versions. I have the one when I interview comedians and radio hosts, and then I have my uncensored wild show with my co-host David. I'm telling you right now, I don't put my show on LinkedIn because, like, I don't want to be that guy, but I have so much respect for you that you're going to put that on LinkedIn.
Well, no, it's just, I just put a link on there. I'm on LinkedIn, so this is going to be, I use all those social platforms to promote our shit and to promote PharrellandEvents.com and to promote Pharrell Coast to Coast on SportsGrid and everything I do. But this show is just going to be a Zoom party. Like, so it's, I sent out a link for everyone, and anyone can click the link and put the passcode in and watch the two games with me and my son and this other crazy motherfucker. And we're going to be lit, and we're going to be crazy, and we're going to be uncensored, and we're going to be gambling, and we're going to be making people money, and we're going to be smoking and drinking, and it's going to be fucked up cool. And so just go on, like, whatever, X, at Scott Burrell, find the link. Saturday night at 6, come. It doesn't cost shit. Just come on and hang out with us. You'll have way more fun. Turn the volume down on the games on the TV so you don't listen to those pussies. And listen to us, because we're going to be unglued. You don't have to listen to the guy calling the game. Listen to us fucking with him and everyone else.
Scotty, this has been a blast, bro.
All right, Hoppy Hour. You know I love you, bro.
Can you do me a quick favor?
Yeah.
When I tweet this out, could you retweet it?
Yeah, for sure, bro. You know I will.
Awesome, bro. Because there's some people that I've interviewed that don't retweet it. And I'm like, really? Come on now.
Bro, don't worry about it. I'll do it. You have nothing to worry about. We good?
Hell yeah, dude. That was amazing. One second. This has been Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, signing off.
Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour. And like that, he's gone.